Hello, this is Patrick from The Fundamental Principle. We're going to do Catholic and Identitarian. Thank you. We're going to finish up Chapter 2 today. We're going to open with a prayer and we'll get right into it. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, soul of Christ, sanctify us. Body of Christ, save us. Blood of Christ, inebriate us. Water from Christ's side, wash us. Passion of Christ, strengthen us. O good Jesus, hear us. Within thy wounds, hide us. Suffer us not to be separated from thee. Amen. Diversity of races. In France, we don't like heads that stick out, so we chop them off. It's a little like reality. When it doesn't please us, we hide it. And yet, after some minutes spent in front of the Olympic sprint event, a stretch of the Tour de France or Nobel Peace Prize ceremony, we can see that one race can have an advantage over another in certain categories. For Alexandra Astor, the author of Camelot series and a musician, Europe is the only concert music that exists. We have pieces with a harmonic richness. Prize accidents among the Chinese, they have a pentatonic scale, 5 notes, and it can last an hour. It is not good to learn that. We have no time to waste, unquote. 2008, James D. Manning, a black pastor in the United States, made some noise in comparing European and African management in Africa. There has never been a great city built, even before colonization by the whites. Blacks don't know how to run a country. Nigeria produces oil each year, and its children are still hungry and go barefoot. The majority of what blacks have ever done, they have done here in the United States with the help of white people. I do kind of recommend people listen to the Ian Smith interviews. I think they were put out in like 1969. I can't remember the year. You can listen to his voice, and like, he doesn't have any malice when he's talking about the African countrymen. He had a true love for Rhodesia. And it was very devastated to see what it became. Like, there's not malice in his heart. If there's malice in his heart, it's not palpable. Nothing but love. I think he really saw themselves, like, I think he saw himself like not as a white savior, but it's like these are people that are going to starve and die without our assistance. I think the African colonization was good. I don't think we should do it again. Like, we have plenty of Appalachians that need assistance, or plenty of folks deep in the hills of Kentucky that, you know, struggle to have a decent life or make a living. Let's get them the basics. Let's get them a decent faith. Get them into churches. Get them cleaned. You know, improve their quality of life before we focus on anyone outside of America. You know, I don't care about the urban black. I don't care about, you know, really anyone else. Like, let's get the least of us in a better position before we start caring about any other race. Carried away by his zeal, Manning did not make any historical mistakes, but these imprecisions do not take away from his larger point. Rather, the pretending towards a good conscience by feigning offense at the statements, we shouldn't be surprised that a white person cannot say the same thing as Manning without facing legal action. Isn't the double standard itself a form of racism? I mean, that's just like, is the Democrats are the real racists? I think at this point, I hope listener that you understand that, like, principles don't really matter. Like, this, we're at war, fighting for our race and our existence. Like, this is, we can't, like, this isn't a war. Our moral high ground shouldn't be, like, pointing out hypocrisy, if that makes sense. Using the parlance of his times, Bernardo said the same thing as Pastor Manning. Quote, I do not despise the idea of race in any way, and I refrain from denying it. The wrong of racism is not in affirming the inequality of races as an evident in races as it is between individuals, but rather the inequality in absolute character, subordinating morality itself to the point of differentiating morality between master and slave. That's a good point. It's okay to have an in-group preference, but like, these people are still anybody different, you know, humans are, all humans are made in the image of God, regardless of the differences. That doesn't mean they need to be here or they need our support. Words are from 1940, 3 years after the encyclical of Pope Pius the 11th. As we know, Georges Bernanos was not excommunicated, and he remains a Catholic author of note. Racial diversity does not entail ranking, because each people has a particular genius. The Mayans were more advanced than Europeans in their knowledge of the stars, were inferior in literature and printing, superior in the knowledge of God, and even different for the Hebrews, who knew more than the Greeks, did not equal the level of Hellenistic civilization. Technological superiority is even less of a gauge of moral superiority for the Romans. Not the Hebrews were capable of abandoning a newborn in the middle of the street. So it's not a question of imposing a general value judgment on such a people, but rather showing the common sense in recognizing the collective character traits that distinguish us from one another. Of course, races are not uniform and impermeable blocks. Obviously, a Chinese can learn to play Mozart, a European can master Chinese calligraphy, but to challenge the existence of ethnic groups because the internal variation is about as logical as denying the existence of cats because there are multiple breeds. I can already hear the protest of bad faith professionals and the outrage on command folks. Quote, you cannot compare humans to animals, unquote. It's not about comparing the man to animals, but comparing one stupid reasoning to another. Is the idea of ethnic diversity among humans incomparable with Catholic faith? Certainly not. Professor Jerome Lusion, doctor and co-founder of Trisomy 21, was the father of modern genetics and a fervent Catholic. He spoke naturally about the diversity of races within a single species. The existence of various races do not remove the quality of human dignity, as it is the fact of being a creature of God endowed the reasoning, free will, especially a soul. There are multiple ethnic groups of races, but there is only a single species created and loved indiscriminately by the Lord. I think I'm gonna make a classist statement rather on this. You know, it's not polite to talk about the differences of people. You know, it was scandalous, even. But you know, you can go talk to, you know, a trailer park, and you can tell a difference between. You can speak very bluntly and crudely about the differences in races because the lack of societal standards in more impoverished areas. So I think a lot of it comes from the lack of having discussion comes from, you know, wanting to appear upwards, if that makes sense, to don't bring up not polite things, regardless of how scandalous. Or regardless of how blatant it might be, rather, not scandalous. And I think a lot of that comes from, like, our WASPy, correct me if I'm wrong, for anybody who is more familiar with WASP upper class than myself, but I think it comes from, like, the Victorian WASP LARP that goes on in America. So I think once that gets replaced, or we just are in such a dire situation that manners don't matter, that we'll finally get over it, this hurdle. We're not equal in sports or illness. Sports are a good indicator for the differences. No one can deny the overrepresentation of blacks in sports like basketball or sprinting. Partisans of political correctness, especially in the United States, when the debate is more open, where the debate is more open than in Europe, argue that sports have been the only way for blacks to get out of the ghetto. But this argument doesn't hold. Blacks can make it into the White House or the head of a large multinational companies, while all remaining overwhelmingly dominant in certain areas of sports. When the National Basketball League was open to blacks in the 1950s. Their population went 3% to 65% in 30 years. Today, that is comparable to nearly 80% of all the NBA. So, I don't really like this section. I pre-read this. He goes into a lot of it. I don't know what the political background of this guy is, but like, I don't understand why blacks were put into or systematically put into higher positions of popular authority as a white societal norms. Rap didn't become popular until Eminem. I don't know that much about basketball, to be honest. I'm not gonna like sit here and pretend like I do. I think there's probably more blacks being good basketball players, running backs, and then that being like the peak rule, the preferred the preferred religion of America. That might have to do with some marketing and some interesting finances behind closed doors. This is just me speculating. This is, gut instinct. I can't prove any of this. I'm sure if I looked into it for probably 5 minutes, I could find culprits behind the NBA and NFL drafting and marketing teams. I'm sure I can find recognizable names, I'll say. In the 2000, the American journalist John Etney published a book called Taboo, Why Black Athletes Dominate Sports and Why We're Afraid to Talk About It. Etney explains the sport achievements of blacks and these of a growing number of anthropological, physical, and genetics. These are becoming less and less controversial. Etney details in particular that with West Africans who are better sprinters than their Eastern neighbors, quote, who are genetically characterized to have a lower amount of subcutaneous fat at the levels of arms and legs, proportionally higher muscle mass, wider shoulders, and more voluptuous quadriceps are generally more developed, have generally more developed musculature, unquote. In 2010, Adrian Benjini, a professor at Duke University, co-authored a study showing that in the physiology of the runners of West Africa, the runners of West African origin, notably thanks to longer legs, they have a center of gravity that's slightly higher than the other counterparts of European origin. Their navel is therefore 3 centimeters higher, hence they have advantage in sprinting because locomotion is essentially a process of continuous drop down towards the front and the mass of falling from higher up falls more quickly, unquote. But whites dominate swimming thanks to having a longer average torso, unquote. The swimmer who makes the largest wave propels faster, and the longer his torso, the longer the wave, unquote. In 2012, sports journalist Jean-Philippe Lecaire published, I'm not going to pronounce the French of this, if you want to look up the French, the translation is, Why White Doesn't Run As Fast is the title of the book. The author focuses on work being carried out over a number of years, mainly in English, and notes that 2003, the discovery by Australian researchers of the alpha-actin-3, the sprinter gene. This gene exists in 3 forms, strong, weak, and absent. He writes, quote, a lot of research has shown that the RR form of this gene allows its holder to have muscular explosiveness while the body is subjected to certain trials, therefore a natural disposition for speed. This form of a gene is very widespread among West Africans and Jamaicans. It's interesting. Like, why are West African genetics in Jamaica? I wonder who brought them there, or how they got there. I wonder if that was part of the trends, or if there was a certain group of people. I think you guys know where I'm going with this. Of course, None of the researchers estimate the role played by cultural or geographic environments, like a sports selection in primary school in Jamaica, or the effect of altitude in the multiplication of red blood cells. But their explanations are insufficient and are used too often for pseudoscientific alibis. In heated discussions, Verquhan Bellet, a physiologist at the National Institute of Health and Medical Research, under the Ministries of Research and Health, argues that, quote, physical performance is 70% due to the environment and training and 30% due to genetics, with the 30% is enormous, placed in favor social conditioning. Someone with a genetic strength have a decisive advantage over less endowed competitors. I'm more familiar with like the bodybuilding scene. I like that. I'm a casual enjoyer of bodybuilding. I like work. I'm working out, cutting the body, how the body changes with different strength programs, and adding testosterone and this, that, the other. And there's a lot of factors that go into bodybuilding. I think it's just how the body reacts and adapts to time under tension and, chemicals. It's just something I enjoy. But you could have a perfect workout program, a perfect diet, everything dialed in, and then still have bad genetics. And it just luck of the draw. Your pecs aren't as developed as a guy, as the next guy over who doesn't train as hard. But a lot of it is, time and attention and effort putting in does make up a lot, can make up a lot. It just, bodybuilding may not just be the sport for the guy with bad genetics, but he can still be strong. And, maybe powerlifting is more that guy's speed, something else, strongman. The muscles may not be genetically coded for good looks, but it is definitely fascinating. The genetic response to even testosterone. I think it's a person with not being able to handle androgynous chemical. Not what is it? The I can't think of the chemical, but it's a reason why guys go bald is that they can't handle a certain. I looked it up. It was the ability for testosterone to estrogen is called aromatization, and then that plays a factor in male pattern baldness and the genetics taken from the mother. I think I got in a little tangent there, so I'll continue. Observing illnesses also reveals great distinction among ethnicities. In 2015, the British League of Research Against Cancer discovered that blacks are twice as likely to develop prostate cancer and die from it than whites. Since the study focused on only blacks and white men living in Great Britain, the environmental factor can be ruled out. According to the study of Institute Pasteur and the CNRS, Africans and Europeans differ in magnitude of their immune responses, notably in certain genetics, genes involved in inflammatory and antiviral responses. Basically, Africans and African descent are more susceptible to autoimmune illnesses like Crohn's, lupus, or multiple sclerosis. Europeans can thank the Neanderthal for the genetic differences that they carry more Neanderthal genes than Africans. I haven't looked into this Neanderthal versus Cro-Magnon thing in a bit, but I'm pretty sure his sources. Systematic immune. I cannot read. That's all French. I've looked into these. I can post it in the notes if anybody's interested. I will. It's Lepont System Immunature Merci. I don't know. It's October. October 2016 study. If anybody's interested, email the show and I will get that to you. But I'm pretty sure that Europeans come from Cro-Magnon versus Neanderthal. It's been a while since I've looked into this thing. Outside the disease or sports, only an American study from 2012 concluded that boys of African origin were beginning puberty around 9 years of age, as opposed to 10 years of the age for Hispanics and whites. This is the first study to observe puberty of young Americans across the 25-year span. Researchers and journalists who emphasize the influence of ethnic factors, either in sports or in the medical field, have never argued that their findings appealed to all the members of the ethnic group studied. These are simply averages. There is more probability that a sub-Saharan African will be a victim of prostate cancer, or a West African will run faster than a European. Genetics is only in its infancy, but it already calls into question the ideological prostitutes of political correctness. After 60 years of intellectual terrorism carried out under the pretext of ethnic statistics would haul us back to our darkest hour. The scientific research has finally begun to pull its head out of the sand. Race is only a skin color. You can safely bet that through cross-section research, bringing together genetics, physiologists, sociologists, psychologists, and historians, we will learn more. If all truth is ours, a Pope John Paul II wrote, why be afraid of it? The taboo on race will be a subject of curiosity for historians of the future. Even crazier ideas are believed. Diversity of human groups is unacceptable for the dominant ideology in Europe. However, truths even more wacky in appearance are very well admitted by everyone. For example, the influence of a first name on the personality of someone who carries it, the transmission of defects and qualities of parents to children, etc. No one denies these things. There are everyday realities for most people. Just open any woman's magazine. According to the magazine Ella, the name Rabinus, the name Richard tends towards manipulation, the name Michael Marie tends towards a prize and conforms very closely to the current fashion, etc. We have no scientific proof of these titles. We blame them solely on the amount of random experiences, and that's enough for us. The disaster of multicultural experience in Hebrew likewise has taught us about the mores and temperaments of Africans. So why deny this conclusion of our collective experience? We should ignore the overrepresentation of African Muslims in prison, but we believe that women named Marie are addicted to shopping. We believe that moral characteristics are hereditary, and the choice of the first name can impact the character of a child, but the psychological or cultural aspects cannot be transmitted through ethnic origin. It's ridiculous. The gross contradiction demonstrates that the ethnic taboo is not rational, but it can constitutes a means of censorship, pure and simple. The ethnic taboo as a political weapon meant to condemn those who resist globalism and the short circuit of identitarian awakening of Europeans. The victory of the truth in politics must naturally pass through a mental liberation, making us capable of dealing with reality. In addition to scientific arguments, we have to upgrade the value of experience. We have to rehabilitate what technocrats call populism, which is nothing more than the political common sense. I'm not really sure what could be said there. It's pretty self-explanatory. I think a lot of it is, like, you know, we believe the silly things because, you know, it's positioning of, it's in a magazine or it's on the TV. Therefore, you know, why would magazines just be able to lie, you know? So I think that's probably why it's more allowed to believe silly things that we see on the television. Delinquency and crime, a minor mirror of ethnic differences. In 2012, the article of Le Progrès, P-R-O-G-R-E-S, raised some controversies surrounding the publication of a juridical police report on delinquency and crime of ethnic origin. The report indicates that the traffic of harshness is run by North Africans, especially Moroccans, the tire theft is especially Roma, the high-end prostitution is often done by Ukrainians and Russians, the ATM attacks are a gypsy specialty. La Express, a police commissioner in a sensitive suburb, noted that everyone's behavior between various ethnic communities. The blacks that we arrest react with instantaneous violence. They are frequently involved in random thefts or break-ins, whereas the North Africans, for example, are more structured, based around drug networks, unquote. And the journalist noted that the visitor who enters a prison in Paris region for the first time sees the true face of those incarcerated. Blacks and browns are overwhelmingly the majority. Regaining the virtue of prejudice. If we no longer dare to affirm the wisdom of prejudice, it's because we are mired in individualist and victim culture, paralyzed by the idea of offending the narcissism of people we're talking to. Prejudice belongs to the general bank and the capital of nations and of the age, writes the Catholic philosopher Edmund Burke. Considering that the reason that produced it and the experiences that validate it, prejudice makes a habit of virtue. Prejudice, the school of wisdom. By eliminating prejudice in the name of an absurd political correctness, we are given up facing the broad outlines of human reality. To note the existence of these broad outlines has nothing to do with Manichaeism. In reality, one part of it is made up of fixed, timeless things, and the other part of adjustments according to circumstances, the rule and its expectations, but the rule precedes the expectations, and the constant prevail over variables. This is how the world is. In other words, dark gray, off-white, or electric blue do not contradict the existence of black and white on a palette of colors. Despite all the existing variations, the absolute references remain black and white. In the same that water is wet, fire burns, clouds hide the sun, even if not the case that every cloud obscures the light entirely. It's much the same with people. The French are grumpy, the Russians drink vodka, the Italians talk with their hands, the Japanese are reserved. Not everyone is like that, but in the aggregate, there are some strong tendencies. Like individuals, peoples have the characteristic traits. Juan de Solorzo Pereira, a Spanish judge of Peru in the beginning of the 17th century and counselor to some of the highest Spanish authorities, noted, quote, based on long experience as judge of the Audiencia de Lima, the court of justice with law enforcement powers, concerning the mestizos, we see that the majority of them show themselves to be a vicious and depraved nature, and that if they themselves were to carry out the largest number of wrongs and humiliations towards the Indians. Now, this is an example of an object remark based on experiences, a prejudice in the noble sense of the term. As envisioned by Burke, there are similar testimonies about blacks, Indians, Creoles, and other American communities resulting from the contact with Europe. And the same holds elsewhere in different times and periods in different parts of the globe. At least before 1945, the intellectual terrorism that was installed by the executors of Hiroshima and Catan, problem of mestizos was a reality in Spanish America in the 17th century. As there is currently a black and Arab Muslim population in Western Europe in the 21st century. What thought police can stop us from saying it? The only prejudice that does not shock Europeans today are those that are aimed at Europeans. You only have to look at a language learning methods, which are quietly loaded with assertions of this kind. The assimile, a method for Spanish, you can read the second in the second lesson, quote, on the whole, Spaniards have a jovial character. They love social life and are friendly and make easy contact, unquote. We don't say, quote, stubborn as a Breton. And don't we say stubborn as a Breton? But when John Paul Gerlin, heir of the famous perfume business, allowed himself some irony in mocking the supposed laziness of blacks, it was the end of the world. MRAP LICRA and SOS Racism complained that had his words condemned by a court of injurious and racist, consulting a public disorder. Don't laugh. The judges were very serious. Only generalities about immigrant populations are out of bounds for the politically correct. The double standard is proof that refusing prejudice is a moral blackmail, a weapon of intimidation against Europeans who are disgusted with invasion immigration under the pretext, quote, they're not all like that, unquote. They want to stop us from holding immigration accountable as it's for accountable for its results and for good, because the result of mass immigrations are so negative that the current elite are heavily insistent in concealing them and not admitting their own responsibilities. This is going to be a spicy take, especially for more the traditional types. Where are these Knights of Malta? Where are these Knights of these Catholic orders? I thought it was about protecting Europe and European culture. You know, where are the Habsburgs? Where are any of these noble blood of old? Are they looking, you know, they're not looking out for Europeans. You know, they're looking out for their portfolios, and they're looking out for themselves. There definitely needs to be a stripping of arms with these noble classes. Like they're far from the decadency really rotted away their bloodline. In forbidding us from exercising the virtue of prejudice, the globalists want to force us to consent to our own disappearance under the wave of great replacement. Humanity is a mosaic. The world is not really like a Francesco, but more like a mosaic. Each piece is different, smaller or bigger, one color or another, and even the material can vary. But as seen from above, that is, from the view of its creator, the unity of the mosaic is indisputable. And yet, if one of the mosaic stones had eyes and the gift of speech, it would tell us how different the neighboring piece is. If God created us as one of these innumerable pieces of rock that made up the mosaic, it wasn't for nothing. In his infinite wisdom, he certainly did this so that we might know how to appreciate our correct place in the world. A mosaic is the association of many elements, not the merger of many elements. To the melt these pieces and mix, and in the mixed result, pieces melting and blending into one another, the mosaic no longer exists, and you're left with a dull, heavy soup. The image of humanity that globalists dream about. Let us remain humble towards the will of God, who put such and such a language in our mouths, and such soil under our feet, and such a culture in our hearts. We should not hide from the divine will by claiming to speak to the universal. The apostles of miscegenation and those of the pure race joined together in a utopianism and fantasticism. For them, the world is a ball of dough to shape in any way they see fit. The Aryan Uber-Inch is one case, the mixed-race Superman in the other. For those who might be more of the radical right that listen to the program, you know, there is no moral justification for genocide. You know, I know this is obviously a Catholic show, so I'm not going to advocate for it. I know, and I think a lot of that's died off since there's been a cut down in FBI-funded Fed posting. I think that's a lot of stuff we saw on, like, Telegram. We saw that online, you know, a couple years ago, was probably backed by the FBI or, you know, one of those organizations. So I think that's really cut down a lot of it because they lost funding for it. But there, yeah, I guess to sum up, there is no more. We need to make the moral argument against genocide, regardless of who's being the victim of it. France, a country of the white race, to deny the historical importance of race, certain people take the example of France, repeating an ad nauseum the famous phrase of the historical Jacques Bainville. Quote, the French people are, as a composite, the better than one race, they are a nation, unquote. Too bad they don't cite the author fully, otherwise they would see that Bainville had in mind was race in the sense of European ethnic folk, such as the Ligurs of Italy, the Iberians of Spain, the Chimbers between the Sinai and Lorraine, the Belgians between the Meuse and Sinai, and the inhabitants of the Greek colony of Marseille. It was the radical stock that he was describing, and not the Berbers in North Africa or the Wolof of Saint-Gilly. For Bainville, despite the real differences between the various ethnic groups of the European continent, France nevertheless remains a composite of Europeans. The royalist historian agree on the point that made by his Republican colleague, Jules Michelet, who wrote that, which is most European, that my homeland, who wrote, quote, that which is most European, that is my homeland, that is France, unquote. In fact, Western European has been made up until now a homogeneous space of white population. Africans and Asian immigration did not appear until the Second World War. This is particularly true for France, whose ethnic composition has changed little since antiquity. As Jean Savella, Svillia, reminds us, relying on pure, DUPAQUIER, specialist in history of populations, external genetic contribution has always been marginal in the French population. Even after the arrival of the Celts in 8th century before Christ, of the Belgica in the 3rd century BC and the Romans around 120 AD, and despite the fusion between these people, the ethnic background of the Neolithic times remains prominent. The Germanic invasions at the start of the 5th century advanced quite far into Gaul, pillaging everything in their path, but most of them went to Spain, and the demographic impact is negligible. Later, the Franks, who occupied the northeastern part of the country, which is emptied by the previous invasion, only represented 50 to 100,000 people in the Gallo-Roman population of about 7 to 8 million inhabitants. From the 10th century, once the mixture of the Germanic and Gallo-Roman people was made, the foundation of the French population was formed. It remained stable up until the middle 19th century. From St. Louis to Louis the 14th, about 500 years approximately, the population went from 20 million to only 25 million. And the foreign contributions, demographically speaking, are paltry. Therefore, the Middle Ages to July monarchy, 830 to 848, during 9/10 of the historical existence of France, the population base of the country remained identical to society, where only margins were inferior in the countryside to the city, and where the only migrations were interior, from countryside to the cities. First, second, third generations were indisputably children of the French, which is of whites. Race and culture are inseparable. Normally, at this point in the discussion, the self-confident opponent starts laying down the cliches. Quote, it has nothing to do with race. It's only a question of culture. Quote, ah, yes, the Ace of Spades culture is used in a debate, but it has no serious foundation. The absolute certitude has more to do with self-persecution than anything else. Self-persuasion than anything else. Of course, being black doesn't condemn you to animism or voodoo, just as white doesn't automatically hoist you to the heights of lyrical art. And we can admit that a person's environment can have a strong influence on him. It is well known that an individual saturated in a certain milieu takes on its inhabitants, but on the condemnation that the milieu is homogeneous. For example, an African baby has a reasonable chance of becoming authentically French if he grows up in a Catholic and culturally rooted family. His chances of becoming paltry, on the other hand, if he is confined to a blend and mixed race family. To juxtapose the environment to ethnicity is an error, since the origin of a person's environment is vital to his cultural upbringing. As Eric Zemmour has said, in quote, in order for the French to walk on their own 2 feet, a majority of traditional ethnic French is necessary, where minorities are remain minorities and assimilate culturally to what the people of white have produced. I think also Eric Zemmour is a backstop for a tribe-free Paris or tribe-free France. So, you know, I don't you know what he said is correct, but I don't think he says it with the best intentions for the future of France. This is why sincere immigrants like Michel Sorel, the former member of the High Council of Integration, declared that, quote, the dwindling number of Frenchmen of French identity, unquote, born in France to two Algerian parents. Michel Sorel didn't hesitate to warn of the demographic decline of whites. Quote, to become a minority in your own land is a real problem, unquote. The assimilation of foreigners is impossible without the preservation of the original ethnic stock to the host country. If whites become a minority, as Western Europe is on track to becoming, there is no chance that immigrants living in European nations can fully be a part of them. Denying the weight of ethnic origin, there is those who still believe in the politics of assimilation are sawing away at the branch that they're sitting on. I think that, I don't know if this is, I don't really see this take said too much, but as Europeans or white stock, European stock declines, there's going to be immediate change in culture. And I think it's a big reason why we can't go back. We can't pretend to live. We can't remake the society before any of the world wars. We can only go forward. There's no, I don't know how I want to phrase this coherently. We're so damaged politically and racially that any idea of going back in time cannot exist, because we don't have the same people of mindset and merit. You know, we don't have the 1920s culture, and we can't remake that. Like, there's no way to preserve culture in Amber unless it's completely undisturbed by the outside world. In the global markets, that's impossible. You know, unless we want to completely isolate ourselves from everybody, which, I mean, I think America can do. I don't know how well that would be economically, or, I mean, I'm not the guy for that. But we can't preserve culture in Amber. So, like, any idea of wanting to go back to better times is just, like, a utopian thinking. The persistence of origins, even in completely grandiose environments, the non-European can still feel the need to reconnect with his true identity. This is common with mixed-race people who are genetically favor their non-European exoticism over their Frenchness. Yannick Noah, quote, barefoot in the jungle, sandals in the city, unquote, celebrates the black African throughout his songs. Lillian Therma, in her book on, quote, black stars, unquote, who have made history. Guyanese independence reporter Christian Tubura Diudana, Diudonne, announcing his departure from Cameroon, the island of my ancestors, unquote. I apologize for all the errors. If I am, French is not good. I'm not good with any French words. I've mentioned this before, but for any new listeners, I appreciate the patience. The search for roots, when it's not based on anti-French resentment, can lead to immigration descendants to rejoin his homeland to accomplish his quest for identity there. Let us not scorn his fundamental aspirations of every human being, intelligently and charitably put into film by Cheyenne Marie Caron in her film Thinking in Terms of Common Good. The show, in short, the argument for the primacy of culture over ethnic origin is valid only on the individual level. For everything is possible on the individual scale, since everything exists in nature. There are Europeans who convert to Islam, sub-Saharan immigrants who have passed for the French language, and Muslims who protest in favor of Charlie Hidadu's right to character the Muslim prophet. But this is far from being representative of the Europeans, Africans, and Muslims in the aggregate. On the larger scale, there are consistents, of course. Not all Africans beat on From Dusk to Dawn, but you have to think Africa is not Beethoven's Ninth Symphony that comes to mind. When you think of Africa, it's not Beethoven's Ninth Symphony that comes to mind. The only level pertinent to political analysis that is of the aggregate, because only the large collective realities allow us to better approach the truth and thus orient our action. Isolated realities are not negligible, but must be understood in their correct place. They are adjustable variables, not the compass itself. Adopting the way of reasoning is fundamental for theoretical reflection exists to serve the practical action that is to guide political power. The goal of the state is to serve the common good and not the personal interests of a few. The state is not a social worker, but rather the shield of the community. Its actions must therefore rely on readily observable realities and not on subtleties brought out to serve an ideological agenda disconnected from reality. I think that, to me, this is why the state should serve to serve the people, obviously. But it also is like a protector of culture and important political institutions for the common folk, that help the common folk. So I think that's why conservatives and libertarians are so dangerous. They want to mitigate the government and trade for, like, a Walmart or Tesla to control big business to control a country rather than, a folkish government institution. To love and defend our race. If Hitlerism is thought to be evil in the Catholic vision, it is because it places one element of human society as the summit of creation, that is, in the place of God. There is a distinct mark of modern ideologies. For Hitler, it was race. For Marx, it was social class. For the liberals, it's the individual liberty, in particular to the right to property and free enterprise. The vision of the church, race is not in question. Race, beginning with our own, is worthy of being defended and saved, as it holds a necessary and honorable place in creation. We will never apologize for the tenderly loving, the soft beauty of a Nordic face, the proud and martial look of the Roman gaze, or the timeless splendor of the delicate white skin whose freckles settle in the constellation, like a constellation of stars. Yes, we love diversity, and we want to preserve it because the world pleases us as it is. Yes, we have the right to want our children to represent their parents. Yes, love for our own and for creation is at the center of our struggle. As Cardinal Joseph Siri, Archbishop of Genova, said, quote, "It is because of our kindheartedness that we fight against the steamrolling of humanity, the crushing of humanity produced by the erasure of differences, which are at the core of humanity's balance," unquote. Motivated by the same love, in his last book, before becoming Pope Benedict the 16th, Cardinal Ratzinger sounded the alarm, quote, "European seems to have completely emptied inside, become completely empty inside, paralyzed almost in a certain sense by a crisis of her circulatory system, which undermines her life. But we want to treat this with transplants, which can only end in abolishing her identity, along with her decreasing spiritual strength. It is the fact that, ethnically speaking, Europe appears to be endangered," unquote. This is a strikingly brave statement by the future Pope, who is certainly denouncing the disappearance of Europeans. If we place this in relation to a very strong expression of transplants, it is clear that Cardinal Ratzinger is alluding to the Great Replacement. He also, taking into consideration the aging of the European population, as he later wrote, "But words have meanings, and here is it is in term of ethnic he chose to use and not demographic." 3 years later, Benedict XVI says, quote, "Nations should never accept to witness the disappearance of which made their whole identity, which made their own identity." I'm just going to read that. 3 years later, Benedict XVI says, quote, "Nations should never accept to witness the disappearance of what made their own identity," unquote. We have to take his appeal at face value and defend our identity in all its components. Truth does not suffer half measures. Like love, truth is fire. And that brings us to chapter 2, which will continue next week. I do think this might be a hot take for, I don't know, what it is what it is. I think that Benedict and his brother, or Ratzinger and his brother, their love for their participation in the Hitler Youth really followed them their whole lives. Obviously, you can't be too boisterous post-war, and it becomes illegal to praise Hitler in any way, shape, or form, or didn't even deny, question the Holocaust narrative. But, I think his brother earned an Iron Cross. I can't remember off the top of my head. But his brother was awarded a Medal of Honor for the Reich. So I think, I can't imagine the love for the people was easily dissuaded from their hearts. I hope Pope Benedict is praying for us in heaven. I don't know. I'm not gonna make this a cinema contest post. You know, it is what it is. I'm skeptical of this cinema contest position. But yeah, that's anyways. We'll end there. I don't really have anything else to say. I do appreciate everybody listening, and then I think we'll have. God bless everybody. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.